The Party in the Back podcast is brought to you by Mascot Link. Connect with your biggest fans now with Mascot Link. In-seat visits, VIP experiences, holiday deliveries, and paid scoreboard messages. Mascot Link's powerful software gives you the tools to create memories for fans while generating revenue for your team. Visit mascotlink.com. That's mascot-link.com to get started.
Welcome to the Party in the Back podcast. If sports marketing was a mullet, the business in the front would be forecasting budgets and measuring ROI, but the party in the back of that mullet would be gorillas playing the saxophone, guys gone wild, and breaking out into song at a baseball game. And we are here for that fun side of sports marketing on the Party in the Back. I'm your host, John Kudo. We're pulling back the curtain on how the most memorable game day moments are made. For more than 35 years, I've been immersed in the world of sports presentation. And this month, we're going to look at the best and most interesting game presentation elements in 2025 and give kudos to the folks who are out there making in-game magic. In 2025, we replaced the award culture with something more playful and light, rewarding some aspects of memorable fun in game presentation, replacing best with the most memorable and remarkable. Five industry leaders join me to turn the awards upside down and reward greatness with our admiration. Out with the best of and in with kudos to you. Five great conversations, so much to work through. We had to make this into two parts. Part one, I'm joined by Eric the Peanut Guy Mertens and Benjamin Hill from MILB. So sit back and enjoy while we dish out some well-earned kudos across sports. And don't forget to check out the homepage on GameOps.com this month with our kudos to you, pages and links and highlights from all these conversations and much more. Let's get the party started with our first guest, Eric the Peanut Guy. Our next guest is one of the most recognizable and entertaining personalities in minor league baseball and hockey. I should note, Eric the Peanut Guy Mertens. For more than decades, he's been the heart and soul of the Tri-City Dust Devils, known for his charismatic hosting, creative fan engagement, and that signature peanut toss that earned him the unforgettable nickname as a vendor. Eric's stories from the ballpark, his approach to connecting with fans, and his passion for the minor league baseball experience makes him the perfect voice to award and reward excellence in the category of the craziest bit of fun. His Let's Get Nuts Award is part of the 2025 Kudos to You Award. Eric, welcome back. Good to talk to you again.
Wow. John, it's really good to be back with you, and what an introduction. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And I'm
intimidated by
I left out the part because you reminded me as we started talking that you're also the host in the Tri-Cities there for the Americans, the minor league hockey team.
Yeah, it's hockey season right now. My heart and soul is baseball. It's my first love, and I've been doing that for a lot longer, but I really enjoy minor league hockey during the off season. So
you got the gift. You got to share, right? And are you the peanut guy for the hockey team too, or that you go by just Eric?
That's interesting. This is my fourth season with the Americans hockey team, and for the first few years they would just call me Eric. But I realized so many people, especially here in the Tri-Cities, would see me and say, "Are you the peanut guy from the Dust Devils ballpark?" I'm like, "Yeah, of course." So now they do call me Eric the Peanut Guy. And I do throw out peanuts, except at the hockey games, it's candy peanuts. Like, do you know those old, like, circus peanut,
the red one,
gas station candy?
Oh, the orange ones?
Yes.
Oh,
they taste horrible.
They're bad. It was one of my favorite candies when I was a kid. I thought that was the biggest treat when you could get the circus peanuts.
Well, yeah, because they're like, I mean, to be honest, I like them. I say they taste bad, but it's just like straight sugar is what it is. So,
how can you not straight like sugar?
No. So yeah, I'm Eric the Peanut Guy at the hockey games now too.
I love it. Well, we talked with you last January, which was a really fun conversation. I recommend that podcast to anybody. And we ended up talking about you last month with Ben Hill, who, when we were talking about the characters of the game in Minor League Baseball, how important they are and kind of where they came from. And you have that great backstory about you were a vendor and kind of slid into the role as host. And now that's now the vending days are behind you, but you found greener pastures as a host.
Well, as I listened to that whole episode, and I listened to all your episodes, and I'm not just saying this because I'm looking at you face to face right now, but part of my morning routine is literally I come into the office, I drink my coffee, I say my morning prayers, I get online, and one of the first websites I go to every day is GameOps.com, because this is the line of work I'm in, and I love the creativity you have and all your posts. But I listen to all your podcast episodes too. So I really look up to you and to Ben. So to hear my name come out of your mouths is a real treat. So thank
Oh,
you for that.
that means a lot. Thank you, Eric. I appreciate you checking in, and I love people. Again, what we try to do is just have a be a source of inspiration and a resource for teams. And so I love hearing that there's teams and personnel like you out there reading and checking in. So hopefully you won't mention that I'm behind on the water coolers, but we'll move on.
I will not mention
Good.
that.
So Eric, your award is the just I'm sorry, and I botched the name of your award again, the Let's Get Nuts. I can't get that straight for some reason. And
Let's get nuts.
obviously tying into your personality as the peanut guy, you want to get nuts. You want to talk about what the craziest, most fun things in sports. We talked a little bit with Amanda about the water cooler. The value of that is like where you check in and like what happened at the game, and you get to share that. And what better than to have something absolutely bizarre and nuts happen at the game that you can share with your friends at the water cooler the next day, or at work, or on your jog, or wherever you're out. So let's talk about some of those ones that caught your eye this year. I think you have six, which is awesome. Let's dive in. What's give us
Let's do it.
any one of them. You can go alphabetical. You can just go what your list is, however you have it. Let's go.
Okay. Well, this is great. This whole category is literally why I love sports. I mean, I love the games, I love the athleticism, but more than anything, I love a group of people, whether it's a couple hundred or tens of thousands of people coming together to form community and to laugh and celebrate life together. So that's what this category is about, are moments during a live sporting event that unite the audience, and it's crazy and wacky, and it's let's get nuts. And the first entry here is actually was one of your water cooler segments, but I remember when it came out because it's my friends with the Portland Pickles. And what I love about this is my mom and I caught a Pickles game a couple years ago. It is the most Portland experience you could ever have. It's baseball, but it's like a street carnival at a baseball game. And what I love is that their on-field host is actually a childhood friend of mine. He grew up in the Tri-Cities. He and I went to grade school and high school together right here in Washington. But now he's a stand-up comedian and the on-field host for the Pickles. So if you go to the water cooler segment, it's called Wrestling Superstar Tosses Out First Pitch. And my friend Jeremiah Coughlin is the on-field host. But it was like wrestling night with the Pickles. And they decided to have a surprise superstar wrestler throughout the first pitch, and it was John Cena. But if you know anything about John Cena, you can't see him. And so there was this amazing like collaboration between Jeremiah as the host, a Portland Pickles player who caught the
Caught
ball
the
the first
ball. I loved
pitch,
it.
and then their social media manager, whoever it was behind the camera filming this, basically they pretended like it was an invisible man on the pitcher's mound throwing out a first pitch. And you could tell the audience didn't know what was going on at first, but within a few seconds, they caught on. The player totally committed. He made like this magic trick ball appear out of his glove. And my favorite part was Jeremiah's hosting, because he was in character. He was like, "Ladies and gentlemen, a special celebrity for the first pitch." But he also weaved in narration so that the crowd knew what was going on, because once again, there was no one standing on the mound because it was all a big joke about how you can't see John Cena. So I think they tied in the theme of the night, they tied in creativity. But more than anything, I paid attention to how all three of those people made it happen together.
The player involvement, and again, I'm watching this clip. I didn't know if that was a real player even, because he was so committed to the bit, which was awesome. And that really made it stand out. That is a really fun moment. And again, this is nuts. It's crazy. It's fun.
Crazy. Yeah, I love it. Okay, second entry. We're just giving some love to these great people. And this is one I didn't know about until I read it on the water cooler segment, but it's equestrian interference by the LA Clippers. This is amazing. So I love college basketball. I'm a Zag. I went to Gonzaga. I don't really watch a lot of NBA, but now I'm going to need to watch more, knowing what you do and knowing your line of work. But this is when Nikola Jokic was playing for the Nuggets, but they're playing in LA against the Clippers. And as everyone knows, and th this is something I did kind of know, he loves horses. He has a stable back home of horse r racing horses, competitive horses. And so to help distract him, the Clippers handed out horse masks or like fake fabric horse heads to a whole section of fans right near the court. And that's something you would see a college basketball team do. That's something you would see like a collegiate wood bat baseball team do. But the fact that an NBA team had so much fun with the game's biggest superstar or one of the biggest superstars, I don't know if it did distract him. I don't know what the end result was, but I just loved that an NBA team at the top level of its sport decided to have some minor league nutty fun. It was amazing.
You know what I love about your first two examples is that it really shows that this isn't. We used to talk in the awards about leveling the playing field as you award, a trophy to someone with the best ideas. It really levels the playing field when you say, like, this doesn't matter. This isn't about spending money because the two examples you gave, the John Cena example, cost literally nothing. I mean, there's $0 involved in that. And what you're talking about with the wall in the Clippers, that might be the most expensive game presentation, not that particular execution, but like everything that they do is just like we're just gonna like throw incredible resources behind this. I mean, they're shooting t-shirts out of the scoreboard. The amount of money that Steve Ballmer put behind that is absolutely mind-bending. And it just highlights that here's the two of your first ideas. One costs nothing, and the other one probably costs as much, maybe like I said, not that exact execution, but they spend more on game presentation than anybody. And it doesn't matter. Good ideas don't have to have a big fat wallet behind them. They're good ideas. So I love that, the contrast between those two things. Go on. I'm
Oh
sorry.
man. Well, no, this is great because what I love about this category is that you can have collegiate wood bat baseball teams all the way up to NBA major league level basketball teams doing very similar
Exactly.
things. And it's amazing. My next entry here is one I was just talking about with my wife the other day. It's one we saw in person this year. I love traveling and visiting other ballparks. We were blessed to go to the Michigan area, and I went down to the Carolinas. But one of our first loves is the Seattle Mariners. They had a great season this year. Grew up a Mariners fan up here in Washington. So my wife, my mom, and I went to Ichiro Weekend this past year, where they spent a whole weekend celebrating his induction into the Hall of Fame and retiring his number. However, one of the best things I saw at a live sporting event was in one of the games. The Mariners were down late. It was the seventh or eighth inning, maybe the ninth, going into the bottom of the ninth, and they needed a rally. The best part is they did come back. They came back to win. I believe Cal Raleigh hit a big dumper home run to sweeten the deal. But the Mariners audio visual team, game presentation team, is amazing. It's one of the best I've seen. I know I'm a little biased, but seriously, it's one of the best I've seen in professional sports. So they have great like hype videos or pump up segments. They're known for their creativity. But this one was amazing. Everything went silent. It was an inning break, and there was a few seconds of silence. So people were like, "That's kind of different. There's no loud music." And then all of a sudden, on the huge video board, Rick Riz, who is the longtime voice of the Mariners, radio play-by-play announcer, he's this fatherly figure, beloved in the entire Pacific Northwest. If you watch or listen to Mariners games, you know who this guy is. It's a video of him walking onto the video board, and he just starts singing, kind of off pitch, a little bit off tune. When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, it's amore. And he's very proud of his Italian heritage. That's something about Rick Riz. He's always talking about Italian dishes, how his mom used to make things, Italian culture. And he keeps singing. But what the video does is it starts bringing in other people from the Mariners community, some players, but mostly like reporters, game day characters, the mascot is involved, and it's just Rick continuing to sing off tune. And then they put the lyrics underneath and the bouncing ball so that the crowd can start singing. And then they start showing clips of the audience, and people are swaying back and forth. And it was the most organic, but like planned organic moment. And within 60 seconds, the entire 46,000 people in T-Mobile Park are singing It's Amore, led by our beloved broadcaster. And it was hilarious because he's not the best singer in the world, but it was also unifying, and it really, within 60 seconds, built community amongst 46,000 people, and it was the funniest hype video I've ever seen. It wasn't like EDM music. It wasn't like, let's go. It started slow, but it built up. And again, if you know Rick, if you know the Mariners culture, it was absolutely perfect.
Oh, I love that. I'll just interject one quick thing. When you have
Yeah.
those characters, we have one here in Cleveland who are so over, and sometimes they don't even know it, but like they can try anything. And like a lot of the chance of success are just astronomically larger. Like if you wrote that up to like somebody else and like, hey, once you try this,
Yeah.
you'd just be like, that's not worth trying. But
No,
when
it's
you
kind of
leverage
dumb and
someone's like
silly.
the goodwill that they have, they built up. I love that so much because again, those are the ideas that are they stand out. And this is an idea that no one's gonna copy. They're not gonna go like, we'll have our
No,
guy
right.
sing That's Amore. And I always love those ideas that they're just yours. No one's gonna take
Yes.
that. You might model it. You might go, our host could do that, and he is into whatever, and he might sing a
Right.
different song. That's cool. And that's where you learn from this. That's where you get inspired by different ideas. But that's just yours. No one's taking that. And that's again what
Yeah.
makes those ballpark experiences so influential and so unique to your team and your city. I love that.
Yeah,
That's
man.
three. You got three
That's
more of these?
three.
These are great.
Yeah, I'll try not to take so long on all of them,
No,
but
take all the time you need.
they deserve recognition.
Exactly.
I also went to a Tacoma Rainiers baseball game this year. They're the AAA team for the Mariners. And my mom and I have been going to Rainiers games, and now my wife goes with me over the years. And they have this reoccurring segment, this character that I have to be honest, the first time I saw it, I literally thought, why is this is kind of dumb, like, and I hate to be so harsh about it, but then I realized, oh, it's a huge inside joke that you only get if you go to Rainier's games. But then by the time you see it a second time, you absolutely love it. It's called the Epic Sax Gorilla. And all he is a man or a woman, who knows, in a gorilla suit who puts on like a disco hat and has a fake saxophone. I again explaining it sounds ridiculous, which it is. But for an inning break in between innings, again, you have 90 seconds for a minor league in between inning break. That gives you time to like get off and on the field. But they'll play this saxophone song that I think people would recognize. It goes da 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 da, and it just re da 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 da, but dun dun da da. It just repeats. And it's like annoying, but it's kind of catchy and it gets stuck in your head. And the person in the gorilla suit will just pretend to play saxophone. And that's all it does for 90 seconds. And again, the first time you see it, like 10 seconds in, you're like, I wish they would stop. This is annoying as hell. But they do it every game, but you never know when they're going to do it. And so people start to whisper, is Epic Sax Gorilla coming? Are they doing it? Or they decided not to do it tonight? But the best part is he'll pop up in a section. He doesn't do it on the field. He does it in a section, and people start jumping up and down, and they're on camera, and they start waving their hands. And again, it's silly, but it's one of those things that the Tacoma Rainiers have owned, and now people start to talk about it, and they start to spread rumors. And if you've seen it once, you're in on the joke. And just Google or YouTube Epic Sax Gorilla Tacoma Rainiers, and with you will tell your emotions will go from this is kind of really too simple and kind of dumb to oh, okay, and then you start vibing and then you start laughing, and it's very similar to what the Mariners did with Rick Riz, where they take you on an emotional roller coaster.
I love it. I love it. Epic
Yeah, man.
sack. I already have Googled it, so I'm already looking at it.
Did you? There you go. And like anything, to see it live is
Oh
different than seeing it
yeah.
online, but yeah.
I have thoughts. I want you, I don't want to stop you. You're on a roll here. Let's go. You're
Okay.
number five.
Okay. Number five. This is another one from the water cooler segment. And I read your description first and I was like, okay. And then I saw the video. I was like, yes, this is amazing. It's Captains Love Toilets from the Lake County Captains, minor league affiliate of the Cleveland Indians, or I'm sorry, Cleveland Guardians, who, by the way, are owned by the same ownership group as the
As the
Portland
pickles.
Pickles. Yeah. And so I know they collaborate a lot. My buddy Jeremiah has flown over to Lake County to work with them. But Roto-Rooter is a great sponsor, a great partner for a lot of minor league teams. They partner with the Dust Devils too. They sponsor
Okay.
our bathrooms appropriately.
Sure.
But, and what I loved about this is Roto-Rooter has signs at the Lake County Captains games, like a good sponsor little signage. And they decided to make it into a game because the sign is like, if you watch this video in the water cooler segment, the sign is like two stories up. It's on a stairway. But the game is an in-between inning game. It's on the video board. A contestant just has a plunger and he needs to chuck it up in the air like he's throwing an axe. And if it sticks to the sign, he wins. And it's just silly minor league fun. The Lake County Captains are famous for their row of toilets seating like behind home plate. For some reason, they really got into this bathroom humor. I think it works. It's become a motif for them. But what I love about the video is that it's a very simple game. It's very silly. It incorporates signage that's already there. So it's kind of like you could tell someone's just walking around the ballpark, like, what if we throw a plunger at the sign?
Let's
But my
stick.
favorite part, yeah, right? My favorite part is that their on-field host, she's amazing. I don't know who she is. I need to meet her, but she basically interviews the contestant after he threw it, and that takes longer than the actual game. And he really gets in the characters, like, this is the best plunger throw of my life. I just feel really, really honored to be here. And she lets it breathe. Like, she lets him keep talking. When I interview contestants on the field, I'm always afraid they're gonna say something inappropriate or get stage fright. So I just ask them like one quick question. But she had so much foresight and trust to let the contestant talk, which made the game even better. So
I love
that's
it.
Lake County Captain's plunger toss.
I have to go shout out to Brad Seymour, who used to be the GM in at Lake County, because at one point I remember him telling the story. He's like, I found out that they have bathrooms obviously at the game. And he said, someone came to me and said, because they have the ship captain theme, he said, why aren't the bathrooms called the poop deck? And he was like, I sat down with my team and I'm like, how come no one told me this? And he was literally mad that they
Yes.
hadn't thought of it. But so they changed the name. They're all called the poop deck now when you go to the,
Yes.
which is incredible.
Okay, can you say his name again?
Brad Seymour, who I
Brad Seymour.
think,
Okay.
go ahead.
Well, I don't mean to interrupt. I'm
No.
sorry. I'm so glad you brought that up because I am currently four minor league ballparks away from visiting all of them, affiliated minor league ballparks.
Does Ben Hill know?
It's
Because
like,
you're coming for his
yes,
corner.
I know. He's my role model. I think he knows that. But one of the first ones I visited on like on a ballpark road trip was the Lake County Captains. And I have a photo of me like 11 years ago next to the sign that says poop deck. And I remember texting it to my dad. I was like, Dad, look at this. This is hilarious. And he's like, where are you? And I said, Ohio. They call their bathrooms poop decks here. It was great.
Not all bathrooms in
Oh,
Ohio, just the Lake County
okay.
Captains. That
Oh,
should be noted. As an
got
Ohio resident,
it.
they're not all the poop decks. They should
Yeah.
be. I think that's fine.
It should be. Yeah.
That
Yeah.
was five. I love that. And
Okay.
number six.
Number six. Okay. Some could say we saved the best for last. I don't know. But what I love about this one is that it's pretty recent, so it's pretty fresh in our memory. It's from a sport we haven't covered in this category yet. And I think it's the perfect combination of a truly organic fan interaction, but that the game presentation team, the video board, the camera people, the cheerleaders,
I know where this is going.
the on-field hosts, they immediately saw this and decided to really encourage it and support it. And so it was this almost perfect combination of organic, authentic fans having fun, but that the team really helped promote. So this is Another water cooler segment. Organic is the O in OSU, Oklahoma State University. This just happened a few weeks ago,
Yeah,
right? I
this is
think.
recent where the fan was kind of dared by his wife, I think, said, I'm gonna go take my shirt
Okay.
off and stand in this empty section. So the guy walks over, takes, and this got massive viral news. And then everyone joins him in section 221, I think it was. Everyone's up there waving their shirts off, which is incredible. And like you just said something important that it's like it's not this isn't planned. And so the
No.
game presentation staff, you say, well, they can't take credit for this. However, like when they shined a light on it, when they kind of embraced it, and like you said, they set the cheerleaders up, the mascot goes up, it goes on the scoreboard. That is part of the show. That is what they're doing. And
Yes.
organically, it's the atmosphere that you cultivate. So it's important to think about that in terms of this isn't something they planned and that they drew up on a chalkboard and said, hey, this is what we're going to do tomorrow, make sure the camera can get this. But they let it happen and they embrace what was happening. So this is a game presentation moment and it's something we can all learn from. It's awesome. And again, this is one of the ones, there's some of these that are obscure that I say, oh, make sure you read the water cooler. This one everyone's seen, but it's so important to think about that as it's not, they didn't do it. But they did it, if you will. Like they, because this doesn't happen unless they get what's going on, they embrace it, and they have the environment they've cultivated that fans know I can do something fun and it's going to be embraced, not shunned.
100%. I think one of the lines you wrote in your write-up about it is they made the fan the star of the show. And it started with one. But then it obviously grew into hundreds of guys twirling their shirts above their head. And what I love is that it started to spread to other college football stadiums. So the next week, a team on the West Coast did it, and then you start to see more people do it. So it's obviously become bigger than itself. And it's just about having fun. It's about celebrating life. And it's perfect because something I've been thinking about recently as my job as an on-field host or an arena or ballpark host is helping facilitate human connection and highlighting it. Because I was paying attention to myself this past Major League Baseball postseason. I'm a huge Mariners fan. And the reason why I was so invested in their playoff run this year is because it reminded me of my dad who passed away a few years ago. And my mom and I got to go to a game this year together, once in a lifetime opportunity. And then my father-in-law and I got to go to a game. And then we love the players. We love the human interest stories. We knew that Josh Naylor was a brand new dad. We knew Gino Suarez, good vibes only. He was with the Mariners a few years ago, then came back. We know things about these players. And so my job as a minor league baseball employee is to help facilitate that. So we have a segment where we interview a Dust Devils player on the field in between innings so the fans can have that human interest connection. But can we put our fans on the video board? Can I interview or in the stands? Can I go up to fans and ask them about themselves? And it helps with that connection. So, Oregon, or, sorry, Oregon. I saw OSU and up here in the Northwest, it's Oregon State. But Oklahoma State, I apologize, Cowboys. Oklahoma State saw that there was already this human connection going on in their stands and then put all their resources to help promote it.
They did. I loved it. That's such a great list. I'm going to make a couple comments before we come to the big moment. We talk about if there's a winner and how that's
Okay.
determined. But I have a couple things I wanted to interject. I was letting you roll because you were in the moment. You were making it happen. First, the one that I have my notes here was that traveling does make such a huge difference. And that's why I really, when I thought about having you on to have this reward, just even if it's like a couple things a year to kind of see things, see how it's presented in different places, that's so impactful and important. We try to at GameOps.com do those live game reviews or try to get all over and see games and think about it as a fan. Think about it like how those teams are developing those things. But anytime you can travel, and I know you'd make it a point with your family to travel and you and your wife go all over the place, that's such a huge help to see how other teams do it. So I love that you make such a point of that and it came up a lot. And the second thing is you just talked a lot about connection and personality. And I love how you, as you talk about these moments, how many times it came up that it was like you and your wife went, you and your mom went, or you and your dad went, and how important that is. And you think about it as a fan and like keeping in mind like the fans' experience, a lot of that comes down to they're sharing a game with their family, with their son, with their daughter, and how important that is, and how if you can embrace that as a game presentation team to really think about that connective thing. It's like you're not trying to make dad laugh; you're trying to make that family connect. And again, it's not easy, but when you plant that seed in the back of your head, like how can that promotion have a little twist to it that's going to make a connection? That's an incredibly important piece that I think it's not overlooked, but it doesn't get the love that it probably needs. And then the last part is, and you talked about this in a couple moments, like with the Sax Gorilla, those inside jokes. That's, you know, we have a story that on an article on GameOps.com about secret handshakes, where it's like those people in Tacoma, they get it. They know what that is. Yep. It's like their little joke, the rally monkey with the Anaheim Angels or the, you know, Los Angeles Angels, where they have this inside joke where it's them. They get it. You have to explain it to your friend when they come to their first game, and then they're in your club. There's an incredible value to that. And I love teams that see that and they embrace it. And they look for opportunities to cultivate that. So this list is incredible because it kind of touches on all those different subjects. And Eric, I'm so thankful that you came on and shared all those six examples of just things that are wacky. They're nutty. But again, they all have that core piece that brings fans together. So thank you for this list. Now, the real moment that everyone's waiting for now, we've hung them out here, all these things. Do you have from this top six or something else that's going to swoop in here? Is there a winner?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I just want to say thanks again for having me. I absolutely love what you do, and I love this category because I think it personifies what you and I are both passionate about.
For sure.
This connection, this wackiness. Man, if I had to choose a Let's Get Nuts category winner for this year, I think all six would be worthy. I'm going to say two. Is that okay?
One
that I saw in person. The one I saw in person was when the Seattle Mariners had Rick Riz walk silently onto the video board and start singing It's Amore, which seemed completely out of place. And within 60 seconds, he had 46,000 people eating out of his hands, and we were all singing it together. Poorly, but laughing and cheering, and then the Mariners came back and won the game. It's like it was a magical moment. And then I think the one that we ended with it, but what Oklahoma State University did was just the the perfect example of fans being awesome organically, authentically, and then a game presentation team seeing it and reacting immediately and turning it into a nationally celebrated moment. That was all about fun. I don't even know if Oklahoma State won that game. You know, I don't know anything about the game, but I know that that was a moment that people are talking about.
I love that so much that you just said that. Like Amanda and I just got done talking. We're talking about making these moments, and we had this little joke about we don't know who won the game. And I think there's people like us who, and again, if this is what you do in the world is you're in game presentation, that's probably good sometimes that you forget about that, because what matters is creating these moments. So the score doesn't really matter. Sometimes obviously it matters in the game, but it's like you're trying to create an event. I have a million other things I could say on that, but I just wanted to say, like, this list, all I kept thinking is they're all winners. The fans are the winners for this. When people are out there creating these like magic connective moments for families, for fans, just like, again, it's not a night at the ballpark. It's an experience that you shared with your family and that you'll talk about and that you'll remember. And that's what we do. And that's why it's so important. So great list, Eric. Yeah. I cannot for some reason remember the title. We keep calling this. I keep calling it Let's Get Nuts is what it's called. Let's Get Nuts. Kudos got to remember that. I got a big sign. Let's Get Nuts. We got nuts today. This was awesome. Thank you so much for this incredible list. And this is exactly what I wanted in the awards. Again, it's not about who wins and loses. We're all winning when we see stuff like this and these examples that just keep percolating up from great teams like the Captains, the Rainiers, and the Mariners, and the Pickles. And that's such a great list from all over the place. I think we learned a lot, and we thank you for teaching us all those great lessons along the way.
Oh, man. Well, thank you. What a treat this has been. Can't wait to continue reading your work and listening to your work. And Shout out to everyone listening. Let's get nuts.
Let's
Let's
get
have fun.
nuts.
Bill Veeck said, it isn't enough for a promotion to be entertaining or even amusing. It must create conversation. We follow that conversation at the GameOps.com water cooler. Monday through Friday, look at a moment created by a sports team and see how it got fans talking. These daily posts are a great way to kickstart some creative thinking for your own show. Look for the water cooler text scroll on our homepage or follow us on Twitter for the daily update.
Next on the Party in the Back, Kudos to You edition, we're joined by the man who's seen every quirky promotion, every oddball mascot, and every unforgettable moment across minor league baseball. He's been everywhere, minor league baseball writer Benjamin Hill. Welcome, Ben.
Kudo, thanks for having me. I'm back. This is what, my 114th appearance?
I would count, but it's just take too much time. We love having you on. You had me on last month. It was such a great discussion. And actually, I loved how that kind of set the table for what we're doing today, which is honoring the people who make these great promotions and hashing them out and deciding, you know, what was what wins in your heart, if you will. You've been the storyteller in chief in the minor leagues for a long time, spotlighting these people, the places, and the promotions that make it so incredibly weird and fun. I love how you bring your curiosity, your humor, and that front row seat you have in minor league baseball to Ben's Biz Corner, which again we've talked about numerous times. But I want to dive in and talk to you about the best promos this year. You are obviously totally focused on minor league baseball. I know your list is exclusive to minor league baseball. I have a couple that are spray outside of the world of minor league baseball, so I may interject those as well. But I want to talk about first what we're awarding here. You know, we're giving away, it's not best promo, but it's the promo that moved you.
Yeah,
promos that moved you.
Promo that moved me. You know, anytime you're doing this sort of exercise, I mean, I've been dealing with this dynamic pretty much my whole career. When you're saying best promo, you know, by some metrics, the best promo is what? Fireworks on the 4th of July, you know, just in terms of like what people want to see, what makes them say like, hey, I'm going to the ballpark tonight.
Yes.
So it's obviously not very interesting if you just do strictly maybe what helps move the needle in attendance based on tried and true, pretty basic things. As a person with more, you know, quirky tastes, a lot of my favorite or best promos are not ones, you know, just might have been a random idea on a Tuesday night type of thing. That speaks to the spirit of minor league baseball. I'm always trying to emphasize and to an extent bring back. I don't look at myself as someone who can single-handedly bring it back, but, you know, minor league baseball in recent years hasn't been as, for various reasons, quick on its feet with promos or just doing like strictly goofy, why not type of things. So I always try to emphasize that sort of thing. But I also, obviously, I'm covering this all year. I'm aware of what's going on and ones that really move the needle, even if they're not totally original, but still really made an impact. You know, I factor that in as well. So it's not an exact formula, but I try to just mention a few that are somewhere within that continuum and still speak to some creativity and teams trying new things and in some cases getting a lot of attention for it. So yeah, we can just roll.
I love it. It reminds me of my former hometown, Portland, Oregon, where there's a big mural on the wall. It says, keep Portland weird. I always feel like you're out there fighting the fight to keep baseball a little bit weird in a good way.
Yeah, I do. But I feel whenever like places start emphasizing their weirdness, it means they've already lost it. You know, like when you're weird, you're not talking about it.
Sure, you don't need to talk about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and just to emphasize the point a little bit more, to me, these promotions are the ones that, you know, Bill Veeck said, it's like, it's the ones that get people talking. That's the value in a promotion. And I think that we will find some like that here. So Ben Hill, the floor is yours. What do you got?
You know, where to start? I'll start on the more quirky end of things and not saying this is like one of the greatest promotions, but just speaking to a spirit that I want to see. And this was at the very beginning of the season, the Syracuse Mets. It was like the first week of April. As you probably know, it's tough to draw after opening day in a lot of minor league markets, especially places like Syracuse, New York, where it can be
a little
just
cold,
as easily 34 degrees. As
stocking hat giveaway.
Yeah, exactly. But their GM, Jason Smorell, is a guy who always is, you know, a real goofball. And I mean that in the best way possible. And I really loved how just first homestand of the season just started. They're not just saying, this initial homestand after opening day is just kind of take your lumps and move on. They tried to have some fun. So a documentary came out just prior to the season that alleged that Jim Morrison was alive and still living in Syracuse, and he was a maintenance man named Frank. So the Syracuse Mets had a promotion on their first Thirsty Thursday of the year, being like searching for the Lizard King in Syracuse, New York. And they had, you know, of course, Doors music being played at the ballpark, and a Jim Morrison lookalike contest on the field. And they actually were able to track down this guy, Frank, who's still living in Syracuse. And they didn't know when they announced the promotion that they'd be able to find him, but they put it out there, got some calls, tracked this guy down. You know, he's like probably in his 70s now, and he looks a lot like Jim Morrison. He won't say for sure whether he is Jim Morrison or not. But the fact that they had this guy who, at least one documentary filmmaker, I believe it was called Searching for the Lizard King, the name of the documentary. But they found this guy who is allegedly Jim Morrison after Jim Morrison faked his own death. Now an older gentleman living in Syracuse, and they had Frank, the Lizard King, out at the ballpark. So, yeah, does that... How many more people came to the ballpark on a cold Thursday night in the very beginning of the season? I don't know. But when that's your baseline, when you start the season and you say, this is kind of what we're going for, I personally needed that at the beginning of the season. I thought strongly about going to Syracuse just to be like, let's go. The season's going. Let's celebrate this kind of energy all year long. So I really appreciated the Syracuse Mets for starting things off right with that.
Oh, I love that. And you know what? Right when you started talking about this, I kept thinking, like, to me, music is so connective with promotions. It's like it really drives promotions. And it's actually like the cheapest piece to add to a promotion. It's like you said, the Doors music. It's like it ties all that together and it like just triggers in your mind. And I love any promotion that like has a musical link. And I was at a Monsters hockey game last night. They do this incredible pierogies night where they become the Cleveland pierogies, and it's built around music, and it's so powerful. And last night they did a throwback to an old Jersey team named the Barons, and it kind of lacked that music thing, and it just stood out to me like how powerful that is. So
yeah,
I love that example.
And you know, to bookend the minor league season, and one that had a bit more weight behind it in terms of the actual draw, is that one of Buffalo, New York's favorite native sons are the Goo Goo Dolls, you know, who were established in Buffalo many decades ago. And they ended the season with a Goo Goo Dolls giveaway featuring the two primary members who are from Buffalo. And those guys were in attendance. And
oh, that's awesome.
I always love that kind of thing. I'm not a big Goo Goo Dolls fan, but the fact that I think celebrating local music heroes is absolutely a great thing to do, and cultural icons in general. So let's stay with music at the ballpark. And another one that was a little more quirky definitely did get some attention. We had an interview about this on our show before the show podcast during the season, but just celebrating an idea that had truly never been done in baseball before. The Hudson Valley Renegades, right there in Wappingers Falls, New York, not too far out of New York City, Yankees affiliate. On August 6th, they staged the first new original musical at a ballpark, and it was just called Renegades the Musical. And so they had a local playwright named Dwayne Joseph Olson write an original show for the ballpark with original songs, a plot that centered around the ballpark experience, featuring characters such as the bathroom line lady. And they performed the whole thing in little bursts in between innings throughout the entire game. And Renegades the Musical, original production, celebrating local talent, actors, playwrights, and getting everyone to have the buy-in to say, like, we're going to do this. I mean, was it an awesome show? I don't know. But was it a fun, quirky thing at the ballpark? And did it involve a lot of creative energy and just a total buy-in from everyone involved to do that? Yes. So more original musicals between innings. Let's make this a thing.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And like you said, just the buy-in where you just have all the random pieces. And again, it's a celebration of your experience at the ballpark. I mean, totally in for that. That's an amazing hook to tell the story with too. That's beautiful.
Yeah. So that is awesome. And then if we pivot to something in a way I didn't even want to include, because it was so, you can't plan for this. It was so once in a lifetime. But I feel like we can't have this discussion without mentioning what was truly by certain metrics, the biggest and best minor league promo of the year was, of course, the Erie Moon Mammoths in Erie, Pennsylvania. The Seawolves played as the Moon Mammoths in July, and then they did so several other times after that. But as you probably know, the Erie Moon Mammoths identity came about because the Last Week Tonight with John Oliver did a whole segment on minor league baseball using a lot of my work. I have to say, I have to always get my passive aggressive, like, hey, you could have shouted me out in that segment. But anyway, it was great to see.
We know the real story here.
Yeah, this show, you know, John Oliver celebrated minor league baseball in this full, deeply researched segment, all this quirky stuff. And at the end of that segment, they said, now we would like to create a new identity for a minor league team. It was a little unclear whether they were trying to full-scale rebrand a team, but of course it became an alternate identity, mm-hmm. a one-night or several nights only kind of thing. Teams from across the country were invited to get in touch with the show, and of course many did and pitched why their team should be selected. And Erie, and this is where I give Erie a lot of credit, there's obviously a lot of randomness to this promo, but Greg Coleman, who's been the president there for years, you know, they've done a lot of creative things through the years and have punched above their weight for a small market like Erie, Pennsylvania, for sure. at the AA level for many years. And I was really happy that the show picked them because Erie, Pennsylvania, it's good to put them in the national spotlight more than a team that is in that is already, you know, the Durham Bulls, to use one of sure. many examples. Love the Durham Bulls, but are they the kind of team that needs that kind of national spotlight? Erie Seawolves is great. Greg Coleman, he sent me the email he sent to John Oliver, which showed that he was aware of the show. He wrote a whole, you know, bullet point list of why he should choose us. It was clever. It incorporated their team history, promos they've done before, you know, right down to the fact that their like tourism director or the head of their convention visitors bureau was named John Oliver, you know, just little quirky things
that's
like
great.
That. So that's where I give the Erie Seawolves a lot of credit for making a pitch that stood out. And then Erie Moon Mammoths was a huge thing. The show picked it. They promote this whole thing on the show. The team itself had nothing to do with the actual Moon Mammoth's identity. That relates to the fact that woolly mammoth bones were found at the by a diver named George Moon at the bottom of Lake Pleasant, which is in Erie County. So, you know, John Oliver's staff looking for something quirky, found this guy, George Moon. He found mammoth bones. There's the Moon Mammoths with this purple dominant color scheme with a woolly mammoth in space emphasizing the moon. And it was a national phenomenon. They had a huge
sure
sold
was.
Out crowd. They are still, I remember talking at an industry event last month to Greg Coleman, and he's just like, you should see some of our conference rooms and office space. You know, it's just, they're still trying to get up to speed with shipping out all this Moon Mammoths merchandise.
Wow.
And, great thing for Erie, Pennsylvania. So while I'm, you know, slightly ambivalent on it because it's not something that teams can really build on and it has an element of randomness to it, I'll put aside the fact that I feel I should have been shouted out on John Oliver for helping to inspire so thoroughly that original segment. It was still a great thing for minor league baseball, a great thing to see. And Erie, I think, did a great job with making it them the team that was selected and then the way they executed it from there, even though they didn't have the usual amount of control in the process.
Right. Yeah, that's incredible. Like you said, there's an element of you can't duplicate that. You're not going to get John Stewart to all of a sudden back your team and create something and jump behind it. At the same time, though, it's like it's a question of opportunity and like seeing an opportunity and seizing on it. Like you said, Greg Coleman did, writes the letter. It's like just being active and aggressive on that. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, alternate identities in general are a great thing for minor league baseball. We see so many of them. I guess I get a little wary these days of just being these were the best promotions and it's all alternate identities.
Right.
And a lot of that really, to me, whether one is good or not, of course, the design of the uniform and logos and the story behind it matters. But, you know, the ballpark execution matters a lot. And I've been at places where there's an alternate identity night and there's not much more to it than just the team wears those uniforms. So, you know, my favorite ones are the ones that not just have a goofy identity that the team assumes for a night or several nights, but also one that shows a lot of buy-in, local connection, ballpark activation that makes it truly special beyond just the uniforms and the logos and the ability to sell new merchandise. So, you know, on the MLB Network, I'm involved in this category on the annual MILB award show. We have a Best Alternate Identity Award, and the one that won on the award show, and one I think was pretty deserving and huge upset, because this won the Best Alternate Identity Award on the MILB award show over the Moon Mammoths. But it was the Arkansas Travelers, who played for, I believe it was an entire six-game homestand in June, as the Barkansas Dizzies. And as Barkansas would have you guess, this is a dog-based identity. Dizzy is the dog, the cream-colored canine owned by the Travelers Vice President of Stadium Operations, Greg Johnston, who in 2025 was working his 50th year with the team. So he's always, you know, doing maintenance around the ballpark, working on the grounds, and he has Dizzy with him all the time. And Dizzy, who I believe is about 8 years old now, he became just a ballpark character. And Greg set up a spot on the concourse where Dizzy would greet fans at the game. And Dizzy became, just as dogs do, just such a popular character at the ballpark. So the Travelers went all out, played as the Dizzies for an entire homestand. So they were able to celebrate a longtime employee in addition to the dog itself, and celebrate his birthday at the ballpark, made it all about the dog, and you know, got a lot of attention for that. And it's a really cool looking, well done identity done by a local firm in Little Rock as well. So I'd say I was glad to see that win the Best Alternate Identity over the Moon Mammoths, just because the Moon Mammoths had already gotten so much shine. They didn't really need any more of it. And I think Arkansas did do a great job with that one, the Barkansas Dizzies. And I think with ballpark dogs, not to go on tangents here, there's nothing wrong or nothing to criticize with a ballpark dog who is owned by a local training school, who comes out on select dates and then goes home with his owner. But to me, that's a different relationship than a dog that's at the ballpark day in and day out, either in the front office or with the grounds crew or stadium ops type of person who is really a ballpark presence all the time. I feel like there's a lot of teams that are like, check out our new bat dog, and it's tied in with a third party company and it's only select dates, maybe once a week. And again, no criticism on that, but I feel that you don't have the same connection or the same time with the team if it's not a dog that, like, truly more or less lives at the ballpark.
Yeah, there's an authenticity there. You know, you talked about how some of these teams connect with the community with these alternate brands, and I think that's such a key piece of these, of a lot of promotions, finding that hook where it's like people kind of go like, yeah, this is our team. I want to shout out one promotion as we talk this through from a non-minor league baseball perspective, and that was the Crispy Bacon Night from the Iowa Heartlanders, obviously home of, like, you know, pork and bacon farming and all that stuff. They had an amazing night with the alternate jerseys. They had atmosphere everywhere that included all these bacon hooks. They had a pregame party with pork and bacon products, and they even had thunder sticks in the shape and color of bacon design. So I love that when it, like, really hooks with the, and makes a point of, like, being a part of the community and kind of like, we get who you are as our fans. And I think that's a really important piece. And a lot of these alternative identities do that in a really interesting and fun way. So I wanted to give a little love to that one as we pound through these promotional nights.
Yeah, you
know, sorry to interrupt there, Ben.
No, that's good. There's two Crispy Bacons already in affiliated baseballs too. First with the Lehigh Valley.
Valley, yep.
One of their mascot racers, and the Montgomery Biscuits have one too.
Oh,
so
delicious.
Crispy Bacons. It's, I mean, how unlikely is it for your name to be Chris Bacon, and then on top of that have your middle initial be P?
Exactly. It's like the old Portland Timbers giveaway of Bob L. Head.
Yes. And that's a great one. Again, not to go on a tangent, but they literally found a guy named Bob L. Head. That was a great one from, oof, we're going back more than 15 years.
Yeah, that's like mid-90s.
That was that far away, yeah.
Maybe, I think so.
More than 15, that's right, yeah. You know, I often don't highlight as strongly ones that are more you know, community oriented or fundraising oriented, just because they're great to do them. I might cover them in the moment, but when you're talking about the more quirky side of things, it's easy to not find as much fun or creativity in something like that. But I would give a shout out, basically a league-wide effort, the Hill Country Flood Relief Fundraiser done by the entirety of the Texas League, obviously in the wake of those devastating Hill Country fires. And where is it on my notes here? I've got all these papers written up here. Yeah, so the team closest to the Hill Country is the San Antonio Mission. So they did, on August 9th, a promotion where the team wore a variety of different jerseys featuring the baseball jerseys of local Hill Country high schools. And so that was like more hyper-local and really good. And then the entirety of the Texas League created their own Hill Country Fun Relief Night. And that was led by Tony Ensor, who's the president of the Amarillo Sod Poodles. But the remaining nine teams in the Texas League all did a Hill Country Flood Awareness Night with themed jerseys and with a lot of different fundraising efforts. And over about a two-week period towards the end of the season, every single Texas League team did that. So to have San Antonio kick it off with a more hyper-local one and then the entirety of the league come together, you know, it's a Texas League. Not all the teams are in Texas anymore, but for something to happen in Texas and to have the entirety of the Texas League respond with the theme jersey and a variety of, you know, philanthropic elements that varied by team. You don't see that very often of an entire league getting on board to one thing. And I like that communal spirit and wanted to shout that one out and, you know, that sort of category of promo.
I do. I like that a lot. And I love when you can find a way to merge, like you said, that kind of like awareness nights, but still make it fun and playful. And I want to give a shout out to I'm gapping on the team name, the Toronto Scepters of the Women's Professional Hockey League. They had a breast cancer awareness night, which again is, you know, it's pretty stock, pretty standard. But they found ways to really make it fun and quirky and notable in a way that was really neat. They honored Erica Howe, who is a breast cancer survivor, who's a former player, had her on the ice. And instead of the typical teddy bear toss, they had a bra toss that night to support the women and to raise some awareness and obviously raise some donations of those for survivors. So I love what they did there, where again, it's like you're making that, you know, the kind of a community awareness night, but made it fun, found ways to really make it personal. And I thought that was a really powerful, powerful night up there in Toronto.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is always good to see teams that bring in a little bit of a sense of humor, even when you're dealing with a serious cause. I mean, you obviously have a line that you always have to walk there and you don't want to be too light when you're dealing with something serious, but to be fun and creative with it while raising awareness and raising money is generally a good strategy if you can find yourself on the right side of the line without something being feeling a little too offensive or not taking it seriously enough. You know, kind of staying on that theme, and for the most part, I'm trying to highlight like newer things, but, and I don't think this promotion is or ever should be perceived as, you know, political. Maybe the times we are, it might be now, but 2025 was the 17th consecutive year that the Iowa Cubs hosted a July 4th, or in this case, July 3rd, you know, whatever their home date is around July 4th, on-field citizenship ceremony. And I just think that is just such a beautiful tie-in with celebrating America. You celebrate all these people who went through the process to become Americans.
I love this.
And dating back to 2009, this was before this year's was done, 482 new citizens have been naturalized on the field at Principal Park. So now that number is over 500 from six continents. I'm assuming they haven't found their Antarctica citizen yet, but from six continents. And just last year was 19 countries, the total number of country count. I don't know. But the pictures from that always just make me feel like truly patriotic, like all these people from literally all over the globe who end up in the general vicinity of Des Moines, Iowa, to start a better life. And they're taking in baseball and they're waving American flags. And they are just so glad to be Americans and to be welcomed to America after going through the process and becoming a naturalized citizen at a July 4th baseball game. To me is, you know,
that's really
apple
beautiful
pie. And the team has done that for a long time. You know, I think with the same judge every year, you know, they've got their systems down. And the team used to be owned by a journalist and lawyer named Michael Gartner, who you know, really cared about that issue as well. So even though that team is now owned by Diamond Baseball Holdings, it's great to see that the tradition continues, and I hope they do that every year, and I'd like to see more teams do that.
Oh, I really love that. That's, again, it's like you just said, apple pie. This is that, that's what America is. It's like, you know, the grand melting pot where everyone comes together and everyone has a different story, but that's a really powerful night. And there are, I mean, it sounds bizarre that Iowa comes up like in that realm, but there's a, that is a, that's a big migrant population due to farming. And that's, again, culturally relevant to the area. So I love that as well. That's a really neat one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've done quite a few, so I don't have too many more. But going to the category of something you really can't plan for, to an extent, Moon Mammoths was that, because they couldn't go into the season planning. Erie couldn't plan to be the Moon Mammoths. But this is one with a lot less lead time that actually won at the Minor League Baseball Business Summit, you know, industry event. So voted by their peers, this won like one of the best like game day promotions award. But it was one the team didn't know they would be doing until like less than 48 hours before they did it.
Wow.
And that was the Winston-Salem Dash for their Prom Wasn't Built in a Day promotion. So what happened here is the Winston-Salem Dash were scheduled to open the season on the road against the Rome Emperors in Rome, Georgia. But a pipe burst at the ballpark in Rome. So the front office in Rome is like, we can't host our scheduled opening day because we have a flood at the ballpark from a pipe bursting. So they call the Dash and say, like, we can't host this opening day game. Dash of the visiting team, can you host it? And they're like, well, we don't really have a choice. We have to. But the Dash, they play at you know, Truist Field. And that, like many ballparks, they host events when their team is on the road. So they had a full slate over the weekend of different events, including a ballpark prom. So all of a sudden now they have this prom they're hosting in conjunction with what is their new opening day that they thought would be on the road and is now at home. So they gave it a really clever name. Prom Wasn't Built in a Day, because it was supposed to be played in Rome. So instead of Rome Wasn't Built in a Day, Prom Wasn't Built in a Day. And, you know, so they crowned the prom king and queen on the field. The t-shirt toss featured fans throwing t-shirts from the stands into the second level club where the students were, you know, having their prom. Former prom kings and queens were invited to attend the game free of charge. Fans were encouraged to wear their own formal wear to the game, blah, blah, et cetera, et cetera. But they really did a great job theming it out on very short notice. And for these kids, I think they had probably had even a better prom, because they still had their dedicated space in a club, but then they were able to be incorporated into an actual, you know, game going on as well. So
that's fantastic. And we talked a little bit with one of our other guests about kind of low cost, no cost promotions. And that's essentially what this was. I'm sure there wasn't like an incredible expense, because there's kind of no time to go and spend money on these ideas. But just like you said, having like former prom kings and queens, that doesn't cost anything. I mean, and the ability to kind of pivot on that is really sharp. That's a great, great bit of fun.
Yeah. So that's about all I have. Well, you know, I haven't mentioned any giveaways, so I'll just mention one giveaway to close out my list here.
Perfect.
This has been one of my favorite alternate identities in recent years, just because they're so simple. Despite the fact that I was saying earlier, and this is true, that I like when alternate identities have like a really strong local connection and a story you can tell. Sometimes maybe that's not the case. So the Hickory Crawdads in Hickory, North Carolina, came out with a alternate identity called the Dickory Docks a couple years back, and they play as the Dickory Docks just because you hear the word hickory and hickory dickory docks. So they're like, we're going to be the Hickory Dickory Docks. And they came up with a cool uniform for it with a mouse running up a clock, and the time on the clock is Hickory's area code and all that kind of stuff. So this year they brought the Dickory Docks back for a couple games. And one of the alarm, or one of the giveaways they did on a Dickory Docks game was an alarm clock. And I just was like, that's a great giveaway. You're playing as the Hickory Dickory Docks, and you get a vintage alarm clock, which you don't see this anymore. We were talking before we started taping about how much has changed. And you know, with technology through the years, very few people have an old school alarm clock, you know, with the analog, just numbers on it and the little bells on top.
And so, you know, kids can't read that anymore. That's a real thing. That's a real thing.
I would think that most kids cannot. I am, you know, my son Harry is 4 and a half, so We're not there yet, but I am going to be a stickler for teaching irrelevant life skills such as reading a clock. And maybe I can get him a Hickory Docks alarm
clock.
There you
go. The call's been made.
Yeah, so shout out to Hickory for a creative promo tied into a pre-existing alternate identity. I don't feel this year there was a lot of giveaways that were just like, what? Like, this is crazy. You know, you had your bobble stashes and whatnot, but there wasn't too much during the season where I was really like, never seen that before. But I'd never seen a vintage alarm clock, and I thought that was cool.
Love it. Well, Ben, the moment of truth is here. How do you want to deal with, we have kudos to you, we have the wide open field of how do you want an award a winner? Do you want an award a winner? Or are we all really winners for all this?
My general sense is these are all winners, and it's very much an apples and oranges thing when you
for
compare
sure.
this. How do you compare the Erie Moon Mammoth to
a vintage
Syracuse
clock?
Mets searching for Jim Morrison? You know, it's versus an alarm clock giveaway versus on-field citizenship. It's very hard to sift this out and be like, drum roll, please, here's the best. It's tough.
I totally agree with you. You know, it's like this is best promo. People have different aims. They have different goals in mind. And I think, you know, to that end, you're kind of pitching things a different way. And so I think in the end, the fans are all winners when you're out there having that quirky vision that you're chasing these kind of like goofy promotions that are just going to get eyeballs and get people thinking like, that's a place I want to be. That's the kind of people I want to be around. And I think that these promotions do that and they get people out to the ballpark. So I think in that way, it's like the fans are the people who are winning when teams are out there searching for Jim Morrison or having their local Dizzy Dog character drive a little bit of traffic. So I tend to agree with you, Ben.
That's good. But it does frustrate me a bit, the lack of a definitive conclusion. You know, it's like watching a show or a movie that you're really invested in, and then it just ends and you're like, oh man, that's a lot of ambiguity after all that investment. But
I think those are the best podcasts where it's like, it's the, did he do it or did he not? Like Serial One, you know, did he do it? And at the end, you don't really have an answer. You're always like, there's a little bit of like uncertainty there. I kind of like that though.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's something we should embrace. Nuance.
Well, here we are
ambiguity.
Embracing it then.
Yeah. So let's do that.
I love
so this
it.
This is the, yeah, this is the, yeah, the ambiguous words awards.
The ambiguously best awards. Yeah. Well, Ben, I am going to personally give you a shout out for all the hard work you did on behalf of John Oliver's show, laying the foundation for one of the best promotions of the year, the Moon Mammoths. That's not happening without your hard work over the years. And so I appreciate you in a way that John Oliver does not.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, I have no real beef with John Oliver. And again, it's been a great thing for minor league baseball. But yeah, a little bit of ego in that, like, ooh, this would not have been the same sort of thing if I hadn't been in the trenches all these years. And I feel even saying this kind of arrogant and stupid, but you know.
Find him now. Read him always. Ben, we appreciate your insight. You always bring it with all the quirky insights and notable promotions from around baseball. So thank you for your time today. And I also wanted to shout out, you were talking about those characters of the game, like the dog whose name I'm already forgetting.
Dizzy.
Characters of the game, November podcast. You had a great coverage of that as well. So if you're into that kind of thing, make sure you check out the November edition of the Party and Back. Ben, thank you so much for taking part in the Kudos to You inaugural run with your ambiguous award where we don't even name a winner, but it's still awesome.
Thanks, Kudo. I'm a winner. You're a winner. Everyone's a winner.
We all win. That is not a wrap for the December 2025 edition of the Party in the Back podcast on GameOffs.com. That's just the halfway point. Join me for part two with guests Rob Wykall, Amanda Greco, and Cameron Hughes as we give out more kudos for more remarkable game operations fun. And I have a request. If you listen today, tell one person about it, maybe a coworker, a mascot performer, someone in your sales staff, anyone who would enjoy hearing from guests like Ben Hill and Eric the Peanut Guy Mertens. Word of mouth really helps us grow. Huge thanks to our producer, the very excellent Chad Gephardt, and thank you for joining us. We'll be back right now with part two and the Party in the Back with more Kudos to You awards for 2025. For my guests, Ben Hill and Eric the Peanut Guy, this
is John Kudo signing off. Join us for part two, where we will keep the party going.